All right, everyone, welcome back to the Modern Car Wash Podcast. Now, normally I am joined by my co-host, Shane Groff, who is on assignment today, so just flying solo. And our guest today is Paul Stagg from Splash Car Wash in Arkansas. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Happy to do it.
So I've met your son, Matt, twice now. I met him in a meeting and then also at this year's ICA show, and also Justin in your marketing department. I've had a few conversations with him, and just two lovely people. And the thing that I take from both of them is how passionate they are about the industry. And I'm sure that kind of trickles down from you. So, I was reading an article that you were featured in, and one of your quotes was, "What's important to me is not the P&L this month or this quarter, it's that we win." And I got the sense from both Matt and Justin that's kind of the culture there at Splash. Can you just elaborate on that?
I think we're able to make, with that approach, we're able to make more look at things more long term. And what's important to me is to have a strong company and say that we're going to win in today's competitive environment. You want to do things that differentiate yourself. And in order to do that, you have to make decisions that are a little bit more long-term. Such as how much you invest in your people, And just if you're an operator, if you're a true operator, you build your car washes a little differently. I mean, from the pump rooms to just the way you install the equipment, things like that, because you're doing it from the perspective of, I have to clean this facility, maintain it, long term.
Yeah. It's funny. A few years ago, we built a car wash. It was right at 2020. And we have the largest back room, and it just makes it so much easier to get through and manage. You could probably drive a car through it. And then you look at some of the older sites where, you're going sideways trying to get through. Yeah. Kind of reminds
you can touch both walls.
Yeah, exactly. So can you just give us a little bit of background on your company? How many tunnels you have? I know you have some quick loops. General overview.
Yeah, well, we've been in business for, close to 30 years now. And so as the car wash has evolved in general, the types of washes we have changed. So we've got a few of the older self-serves and automatics, but most of ours are express. And we have right now, I think we have 15 locations that are car washes that are open and 10 oil changes.
Okay.
A couple of the oil changes are freestanding, but most of them are on property adjacent to the car wash or integrated into the same building as the car wash.
Okay.
Of the 15 washes, I believe we have 6 that are flex model and the rest are express. Going forward, we will do probably 1 flex a year and, 5 or 6 expresses.
It's interesting, from Hoffman Car Wash standpoint, and maybe this is a regional thing, it might be a state thing, controlling labor is the things that we focus on the most, or one of our biggest struggles. So a full service or even a flex service where you're adding staff is something that we've kind of shied away from, and have kind of almost gone all in on the express model. Do you see that in Arkansas, or is it just kind of maybe not as, minimum wage here continues to skyrocket.
It's certainly the path that all of our competitors have taken is just express, minimal labor. And I think they're smart to do that because if you're building locations, in a large geographic area, I would think it would be very difficult to manage that number of employees. We like the flex because it gives us an opportunity to have more touch points with the customers. And it's an opportunity to build relationships with customers. But with the opportunity comes responsibility if you're going to do it well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, because you have the opportunity to build relationships doesn't mean you're going to succeed in that. So it's a lot more difficult, but it's a way we can differentiate. And if we are staying close to home, we can actually do that. Plus, having been in the business a long time, having had some full service washes, there's a void there, and we like that we have the ability to fill it.
So the flex model that you've gone to, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the most recent one I've seen is, it was an old Walmart or an old store that has a tile wash and then has a belt for interior cleaning and then also free vacuums as well.
Yeah, we actually, coincidentally, we came across two opportunities about the same time. They were both 35,000 square foot buildings. One was an old Walmart neighborhood market where they had that unit, and they built a super center not far away, so they closed that one. And then the other one was a trampoline park. It was food traveling building, and COVID hit, and that, of course, that just devastated their business there. So we had the opportunity to take two of these at one time. I do not recommend doing that. The way the timing worked out with COVID, it got compressed, and it was quite an ordeal doing that. But now that I have them, I'm glad I do. But
yeah.
One of them is as you described, and then the one that was a trampoline park that's in Little Rock, it's what we refer to as our Chenal store. It's on Chenal Avenue, but it actually has two tunnels, 24 indoor free vacuums, and two detail belts.
Okay, what's nice about your sites is when you look at it, you have the kind of like the indoor AstroTurf grass area. You have areas for the kids. It really, you thought of everything in the sense of like making it such a great experience, not just getting your car clean, but making sure that the kids are entertained. I see like free coffee, everything. How much time and consideration did you go into that, or did you still, or were you inspired from something else that you had seen somewhere?
Well, we've seen a lot of car washes. There's some really nice car washes in the U.S. We went to Washington, D.C. and some other areas where there's some really great car washes. The original inspiration came from Europe, from Amsterdam and Western Germany. And I went there in 2015 and fell in love with, you know, the belts and the epoxy floors and the stainless. And so anyway, I brought that back and actually built a facility in Rogers, a 14,000 square foot new building. And so that's where the idea originated.
Yeah. It's, you know, in doing the research for this and different areas where I've come across your bio or different articles, it seems like that European it becomes a talking point almost, and it seems like you've took a lot of inspiration from going to see those models or those car washes in Europe. You know, 2015, you've been in the industry a long time. You go, I'm assuming 2015 was the first time you'd gone over to see it. Well, were you kind of in awe? Is it?
Oh, I was in awe. And here's the thing. All of the features that I put into the washes, they don't, you know, they don't necessarily translate into more revenue. Okay. There's not a direct correlation between having brick pavers in the building or having epoxy floor or any of those sorts of things. what it does, it's every little detail I can think of that would help us when competition comes to town. And if I'm planning on owning it for 40 years, you know, then the cost of those things is, it's the way I justify it. Let's just put it that way. Justify the expense. And you only get one chance to do that. Always. That's, and I'm not bragging. You know what I mean? That's not all blessing. But if everybody's going here, there's something in me that wonders what's over here. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's not a good thing. But, you know, when I first started in Arkansas, what existed was metal buildings for self-serve bays, and then you had automatics at gas stations. And I traveled up in Missouri, and I saw car washes built on prime property that were really nice looking self-serve bays with all the bells and whistles and with automatic. And I just have always felt like people like nice things, and you know, people like a choice. You can go to a less expensive wash, or you can go to something that's more upscale. Always felt like I'd rather compete on, you know, not rather compete based on price.
Sure. It's I heard a great analogy one time, and it was if everyone based a decision on price, then there would be no Mercedes, no BMWs, or, you know, so it's the quality, it's the how you make people feel about it that really can drive them as far as the choices that they make. You touched on, you know, when you were first starting out, and I believe your introduction to the car wash was the Arkansas Car Wash Systems. Is that correct?
Yeah. When I first started, it was more of a sales company. So we had a line of equipment, and I built a car wash for my brother in a town of 3,000 people. Three self-serve bays, one automatic, in 1995. And people passing through would see that. They would call us and say, would you do one for me in this town or this town or this town? So we did about 50 of those for people, where we built them and serviced them just like, you know, we were just a distributor. We did a couple of our own car washes. And then as the industry evolved, we wound up building the Boomerang franchise, which wound up being about 20 express tunnels in Arkansas and the states that touched Arkansas. But I had partners in it, and I wanted to just go back to just doing being more of an operator than the developer. So I sold that company, and that's when that was probably 2008. And then I just started doing my own.
Yeah. So is your, what path did your brother take?
My brother built several self-serves, and then I wound up buying him out about 2016.
Okay. All right. So, the Boomerang franchise, was kind of your introduction into the express tunnel model. You felt more like you were a developer at that point?
Oh, I definitely was a developer. Our company had investors, but anyway, all the employees were mine.
Okay.
The investors, and which I was one of, that owned the 20 car washes, those companies had no employees. So we did the development, we serviced it, we had all the employees, we did all that. And it just wasn't really a sustainable model, not one that was that was really, it was just too cumbersome. So I sold out of that. And then, as I said, just did my own thing.
Yeah. So when you started Splash, was the idea like, all right, let's just get leaner, let's be more efficient. And kind of now you're truly working for yourself in this.
Now I'm an operator. That's when I transitioned into really being an operator. And primarily, I'd say, because I didn't want to be responsible for, I didn't want to have that burden of being responsible for the success, because I took it personally. It was personal to me that everybody was successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I would rather not have that. I'd rather be able to make, just be free to make decisions that are more long-term in nature.
Yeah. So a lot of times, a lot of the guests on and through Tom Hoffman and that we have on, we see a lot of like second or third generation mm-hmm. operators, where you're still first generation in Splash. So I know Matt's involved, and you have a daughter involved as well?
Yeah, my daughter is Chief Human Resource Officer, Natalie. But it really kind of goes beyond that. Those are my two blood children, but I have a group of five or six other young guys that are like children to me. I mean, these are young guys that are super sharp, and they are really what's driving the company. I don't make any decisions. I don't want to go anywhere that these guys don't want to go. I don't mean geographically. I just mean in leading the company. And I tell them that although I may own all the stock, I'm going to treat you like your owners. I don't want you. I want the caliber of people that want the same things out of life that I want. And I want to make sure that they can see a pathway that they can achieve their goals at this company. And so in that regard, it's more than just my son and my daughter. It's all of these young leaders.
Yeah. How difficult is it to, you clearly trust these people. Are these people who have kind of come up in your industry? Maybe they started.
Well, I can't take credit for recruiting all of them, because two of them are my son's brother-in-laws.
Okay.
So they're connected by family. Another one has been best friends since the third grade. Another one was a college fraternity brother. I mean, these are all highly qualified people. They're not in our company because they needed a job. They're in our company because they trusted, even though it's a car wash, that we're more than a car wash.
Yeah.
And so we're very fortunate to have the people that we have.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's and for you to be able to trust, I mean, this is your baby, right? But to have the trust in them to say, you know what, guys, like, we're all in this together. We have the goal and so forth. So kudos to you on that one. So can you talk about the makeup of the company? How many employees you have? Kind of your hierarchy, I guess, if you would.
Yeah, we have over 300 employees now. You know, our growth plans. I will say this: we've been like, I'm a go go go, push push push, let's go. But we've grown too fast, to be honest with you. And what we're finding is, like, we have high standards. At least we profess we have high standards. And we really do desire that. But at the rate we have grown, we can't sustain that if we don't slow down some. So I've been very intentional about our core values and really what we're all about. I've made the statement to a manager before, back when I was more involved in the day-to-day operations. We post our core values, and I have mentioned that if I need to take that down for a couple of weeks, I can, you know. But we put these up for us, not for our customers. And so it's just dawned on me recently that maybe we've grown a little too fast. We need to slow down to make sure that we can really do what we say we're going to do.
How did you come to that realization, do you think?
Just by seeing some things that we weren't doing as well as we should be doing, and then realizing the reason we're not doing them is because we're going too fast. And so, anyway, we're going to address that. And I don't want anybody to get burnt out. Like, everybody talks about their culture. And I tell you what I hear from other operators is very encouraging, because so many people are genuinely focused on this now. And I think it's going to help our industry. It's going to change the public's perception of our industry. So I'm very happy about that. And so it's just a matter of going back and addressing, making sure you can do what you think you can.
Yeah. How do you think your company culture has changed over the last, say, 10 years, if it has at all?
I'm very pleased with our company's culture. We're really good. It's just a constant, if you're really serious about it, and you're really looking at it and examining it, you're going to see places you need to shore up and see some course corrections. We've had to do that a couple of times. When there's pressure to hire people, you got new stores opening and there's pressures to hire people, there's a temptation to take a shortcut in your vetting process. We did that for a couple of months. We saw the results of it and we went back and addressed it, and we won't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, just things like that.
So when you're building new stores and you're looking for leaders in those stores, are you hiring outside or is it all kind of homegrown?
We do not hire outside anymore. We've done that. I'm not saying we wouldn't ever do it.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the last time we went outside to hire a manager.
Okay.
That's one of the good things about growth is there's a clear pathway to hire all the bright, people you can, because there's a path for that. So that's one of the positives of growing.
I know here, in the last 5 years, we've opened 8 stores. And kudos to our HR department, our training department, our operations people. Like, I remember sitting in meetings, and that's a concern is, okay, we're going to open 4 stores in the next year and a half. Who's going to run these stores? Who are the people that we're going to identify? And it's that long game that you kind of talked about, is making sure that you have the, not to use the sports analogy, but I will, but having the minor league team that you're developing players in that can move up and step into, the right position. And with that though, and it sounds like you did this as well, is that there are times where you're going to have to make tough decisions and maybe walk back something that you had to do. But it just seems from here, listening to you talk, like how important, I guess, how far out are you thinking as far as this long-term plan? Is it 10 years? Is it 50 years? What's that look like?
Well, to me, it's more about the day-to-day. Yeah, you have to have a vision, but it's making sure that the things you're doing today are going to position you for success later on. Like, we were producing, and, I'm just being honest. I'm just kind of showing you all the good and the bad, but we did a fantastic job with our company newsletters. I mean, they were very proud of those. It was really hard to open a lot of stores and still maintain a quarterly newsletter to that degree. And so we had to make a choice. But I think that those company newsletters were so important for the pipeline of attracting, new employees, because the things we were doing, the team building, that sort of thing, we're going to have to redouble our efforts on that, because if you don't do the right things today, you know, you won't be prepared for the future. And I feel really good about where we are in, you know, recommitting to some of those things.
So for those who don't know, and you can see these newsletters, they're on cleancarfast.com, which is the Splash website. They're incredibly in-depth. They're a great look at the company and the insight. And I could definitely see them. And I think they serve the purpose as a recruiting tool. And they certainly are. President, I was going to ask you about that, because when you're on the site, you could see that there seems to be a lag in kind of when they were last produced. But now I know the answer. You know, for us, hiring up until about, I don't know, 6 months ago was an issue as just far as employee availability or just finding people. At this point, we're around 95% fully staffed, 96, 97. So we're pretty pleased with those numbers. Did you have similar experiences coming out of COVID and even up until maybe like a year ago?
I'll tell you, I think it has gotten more challenging, but I really believe it's because of I really believe part of it is because it's a reflection of us having to open so many new stores, and we didn't prepare the soil like we were before,
right?
And I really believe it's like anything else. If you do the fundamentals, if you keep doing the right things, you'll get the payoff down the road. But when you take shortcuts, it's going to show up somewhere. And so we're staffing our stores. We have a great HR team. We just have to make sure that we do the blocking and tackling every day to make sure we're prepared for that success.
What keeps you up at night?
I don't know that anything keeps me up at night, but I always want to make sure our people are taken care of. Okay. It goes back to being prepared. And I want to make sure that all of our people are supported well, all of our leaders, and that from the guys I depend on to the guys, you know, below them, and just make sure I give good leadership and guidance, because I've got the right guys on the team. Just got to make sure I'm doing the right thing.
So as an industry as a whole, I think we've seen a lot of changes over the last few years, but what's to come? What do you think? What most excites you when you think of the next few years in the car wash industry?
Well, it's growing up. It's getting more sophisticated. There are more sophisticated people involved in the industry now, in some regard. I think the thing that's going to be interesting over the next 5 years is the groups that have come in and grown rapidly and purchased car wash groups and groups of car washes and that are more financial savvy is what drives them. They have to have a return. They're motivated by they take a more short-term view than the family operations, the guys that I know that are in businesses, family, you know, units. And so if you don't plan to own something for more than 4 or 5 years, the way you take care of that is going to be different than somebody who plans on handing it down to their son or grandson or whatever. And so I wonder if some of these stores don't start reflecting some of the priorities. So that'll be interesting.
So as a operator at heart, you know, we're off in development, off in car wash, and then innovate it. I think we view ourselves as a very like tech front company. You know, I think sometimes we refer to ourselves as more of an IT company than like in the service industry. How has Splash incorporated technology into what you do? Maybe not even necessarily in the tunnel, but just is there anything there that kind of excites you or surprises you?
Well, for one thing, you're talking to the wrong guy. But I'll tell you what I try to do is I try to network with people like your company that knows more about this than I do, and I just pick their brain and try to put my guys in touch with the right people to make sure that we're keeping up with all that. I am very interested. I do want our company to be on the cutting edge of that, just like I do in any other aspect, whether it's, you know, the building, the look of the building and our people, all that sort of thing. On the technology side, I want to make sure that we're up front on that as well. And I depend on my people to do that. I try to connect them to people that can help them.
I think I forgot last episode, just to have a little lighthearted conversation at the end about, you know, I'm curious to pick your brain about what you're possibly watching on TV currently. Is there a show that you're binge watching or something that, because I'm always looking for recommendations.
Well, you're probably not going to get a good one from me. Okay. I do watch TV, but it's mainly just to put my mind in neutral.
Okay. Yeah,
not for excitement. It's not. I watch the British Mysteries.
Okay.
And it's just a way that I can just relax.
Yeah. How does your wife get involved in that too? She
does not watch TV at all. She doesn't understand how I can watch TV. She is always doing something.
Yeah.
So
our this is season 3 of this of the podcast, and the first episode we had just finished the series, and I'm like, what can I watch? And I don't watch too much TV, but we're always looking for something, so I'm always curious where it leaves it. But those, I'll tell you, the British, those shows, whether it's soap opera or mystery or whatever it is, like they're a whole other animal all into itself. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I like. It takes me away, right? So it's
excellent. Paul, yeah. This has been incredible. I'm so excited to see what happens to your company the next couple of years. I'm glad that the Hoffman family has developed a relationship with you as well. It's just incredible to hear you speak and what you have planned. And I really appreciate you taking the time to jump on and have this conversation.
Well, I'm happy to do it. I've enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay.